that. Philip nodded grimly. With William as sheriff, Walleran as bishop, and the faithless Richard as earl, it is now completely impossible for Kingsbridge Priory to get justice in this county. They could do anything they like to us. While a stable boy saddled their mounts, Philip said, I'm going to petition the king to make Kingsbridge a borough. That way we'd have our own court and we'd pay our taxes directly to the king. In effect, we would be out of the jurisdiction of the sheriff.
You've always been against that in the past, Jonathan said.
I've been against it because it makes the town as powerful as the priory, but now I think we may have to accept that as the price of independence. The alternative is William.
Will King Stephen give us borough status?
He might, at a price. But if he doesn't, perhaps Henry will, when he becomes king. They mounted their horses and rode dejectedly through the town. They went out through the gate and past the rubbish dump on the waste ground just outside. A few decrepit people were picking over the refuse, looking for anything they could eat, wear, or burn for fuel. Philip glanced at them without interest, but one of them caught his eye. A familiar tall figure was stooping over a heap of rags, sorting through them. Philip reined in his horse. Jonathan pulled up beside him.
Look, Philip said.
Jonathan followed his gaze. After a moment he said quietly,
Remigius.
Philip watched. Walleran and William had obviously thrown Remigius out some time ago, when funds for the new church dried up. They had no further need of him. Remigius had betrayed Philip, betrayed the priory, and betrayed Kingsbridge, all in the hope of becoming Dean of Shiring. But his prize had turned to ashes. Philip turned his horse off the road and crossed the waste ground to where Remigius stood. Jonathan followed. There was a bad smell that seemed to rise from the ground like fog. As he approached, he saw that Remigius was skeletally thin. His habit was filthy and he was barefoot. He was 60 years old, and he had been at Kingsbridge Priory all his adult life. No one had ever taught him how to live rough. Philip saw him pull a pair of leather shoes out of the trash. There were huge holes in the soles, but Remigius looked at them with the expression of a man who has found buried treasure. As he was about to try them on, he saw Philip. He straightened up. His face evidenced the struggle between shame and defiance in his heart. After a moment he said,
Well, have you come to gloat?
No, Philip said softly. His old enemy was such a pitiful sight that Philip felt nothing but compassion for him. He got off his horse and took a flask out of his saddlebag.
I've come to offer you a drink of wine.
Remigius did not want to accept it, but he was too starved to resist. He hesitated only for a moment, then snatched the flask. He sniffed the wine suspiciously, then put the flask to his mouth. Once he had begun drinking, he could not stop. There was only half a pint left, and he drained it in a few moments. He lowered the flask and staggered a little. Philip took it from him and put it back into his saddlebag.
You'd better have something to eat as well, he said.
He brought out a small loaf. Remigius took the proffered bread and began to stuff it into his mouth. He obviously had not eaten for days, and he probably had not had a decent meal for weeks. He could die soon, Philip thought sadly, if not of starvation, then of shame. The bread went down fast. Philip said,
Do you want to come back?
He heard a sharp intake of breath from Jonathan. Like a good many of the monks, Jonathan had hoped never to see Remigius again. He probably thought Philip was mad to offer to take him back. A hint of the old Remigius showed for a moment, and he said,
Come back.
In what position? Philip shook his head sorrowfully.
You'll never hold a position of any kind in my priory, Remigius. Come back as a plain humble monk, ask God to forgive your sins, and live the rest of your days in prayer and contemplation, preparing your soul for heaven.
Remigius tilted his head back, and Philip expected a scornful refusal. But it never came. Remigius opened his mouth to speak, and then closed it again and looked down. Philip stood still and quiet, watching, wondering what would happen. There was a long moment of silence. Philip was holding his breath. When Remigius looked up again, his face was wet with tears.
Yes, please, Father, he said. I want to come home.
Philip felt a glow of joy. Come on, then, he said. Get on my horse. Remigius looked flabbergasted. Jonathan said, Father, what are you doing? Philip said to Remigius, Go on. Do as I say. Jonathan was horrified. But, Father, how will you travel?
I'll walk, Philip said happily. One of us must.
Let Remigius walk, Jonathan said in a tone of outrage.
Let him ride, Philip said. He's pleased God today.
What about you? Haven't you pleased God more than Remigius?
Jesus said there's more joy in heaven over one sinner who repents than over 99 righteous people, Philip countered. Don't you remember the parable of the prodigal son? When he came home, his father killed the fatted calf. The angels are rejoicing over Remigius's tears. The least I can do is give him my horse.
He took the bridle and led the way over the waste ground to the road. Jonathan followed. When they reached the road, Jonathan dismounted and said, Please, Father, take my horse then and let me walk. Philip turned to him and spoke a little sternly.
Now get back on your horse, stop arguing with me, and just think about what is being done and why.
Jonathan looked puzzled, but he mounted again and said no more. They turned toward Kingsbridge. It was 20 miles away. Philip began to walk. He felt wonderful. The return of Remigius more than compensated for the quarry. I lost in court, he thought, but that was only about stones. What I gained was something infinitely more valuable. Today, I won a man's soul. 3. New ripe apples floated in the barrel, shining red and yellow, while the sun glinted off the water. Sally, 9 years old and excitable, leaned over the rim of the barrel with her hands clasped behind her back and tried to pick up an apple in her teeth. The apple bobbed away, her face plunged into the water, and she came away spluttering and squealing with laughter. Aliena smiled thinly and wiped her little girl's face. It was a warm afternoon in late summer, a saint's day and a holiday, and most of the town had gathered in the meadow across the river for the apple bobbing. This was the kind of occasion that Aliena had always enjoyed, but the fact that it would be her last saint's day in Kingsbridge was constantly on her mind, weighing down her spirits. She was still determined to leave Jack, but since she had made the decision she had begun to feel, in advance, the pain of loss. Tommy was hovering near the barrel, and Jack called out, "Go on, Tommy, have a go!"
"Not just yet," he replied.
At the age of 11, Tommy knew he was smarter than his sister, and he thought he was ahead of most other people, too. He watched for a while, studying the technique of those who were successful at apple-bobbing. Aliena watched him watching. She loved him specially. Jack had been about this age when she had first met him, and Tommy was so like Jack as a boy. Looking at him made her nostalgic for childhood. Jack wanted Tommy to be a builder, but Tommy had not yet shown any interest in construction. However, there was plenty of time. Eventually he stepped up to the barrel. He bent over it and put his head down slowly, mouth wide open. He pushed his chosen apple under the surface, submerging his whole face, and then came up triumphantly with the apple between his teeth. Tommy would be successful at whatever he put his mind to. There was a little of his grandfather, Earl Bartholomew, in his make-up. He had a very strong will and a somewhat inflexible sense of right and wrong. It was Sally who had inherited Jack's easygoing nature and contempt for man-made rules. When Jack told the children stories, Sally always sympathized with the underdog, whereas Tommy was more likely to pronounce judgment on him. Each child had the personality of one parent and the appearance of the other. Happy-go-lucky Sally had Aliena's regular features and dark, tangled curls, and determined Tommy had Jack's carrot-colored hair, white skin, and blue eyes. Now Tommy cried, "Here comes Uncle Richard!" Aliena spun around and followed his gaze. Sure enough, her brother the Earl was riding into the meadow with a handful of knights and squires. Aliena was horrified. How did he have the nerve to show his face here after what he had done to Philip over the quarry? He came over to the barrel, smiling at everyone and shaking hands.
"Try to bob an apple, Uncle Richard," said Tommy. "You could do it."
Richard dipped his head into the barrel and came up with an apple in his strong white teeth and his blonde beard soaking wet. He had always been better at games than at real life, Aliena thought. She was not going to let him carry on as if he had done nothing wrong. Others might be afraid to say anything because he was the Earl, but to her he was just her foolish little brother. He came over to kiss her, but she pushed him away and said, "How could you steal the quarry from the Priory?" Jack, seeing a quarrel coming, took the children's hands and moved away. Richard looked stung. "All property has reverted to those who possessed it. Don't give me that," Aliena interrupted. "After all Philip has done for you?" "The quarry is part of my birthright," he said. He took her aside and began to speak in low tones, so that no one else could hear. "Besides, I need the money I get by selling the stones, Ali." "That's because you go hunting and hawking all the time. But what should I do?" "You should make the land produce wealth. There's so much to be done, repairing the damage caused by the war and the famine, bringing in new farming methods, clearing woodland and draining swamps. That's how to increase your wealth, not by stealing the quarry that King Stephen gave to Kingsbridge Priory." "I've never taken anything that wasn't mine."
"You've never done anything else," Aliena flared.
She was angry enough now to say things that were better left unsaid. "You've never worked for anything. You took my money for your stupid weapons, you took the job Philip gave you, and you took the earldom when it was handed to you on a plate by me. Now you can't even run it without taking things that don't belong to you." She turned away and stormed off. Richard came after her, but someone waylaid him, bowing and asking him how he was. Aliena heard him make a polite reply, then get embroiled in a conversation. So much the better. She had said her piece, and she did not want to argue with him any further. She reached the bridge and looked back. Someone else was talking to him now. He waved at her, indicating that he still wanted to speak to her, but he was stuck. She saw Jack, Tommy, and Sally beginning a game with a stick and a ball. She stared at them, playing together in the sunshine, and she felt she could not bear to separate them. "But how else," she thought, "can I lead a normal life?" She crossed the bridge and entered the town. She wanted to be alone for a while. She had taken a house in Winchester, a big place, with a shop on the ground floor, a living room upstairs, a separate bedchamber, and a large storeroom at the end of the yard for her cloth. But the closer she got to moving, the less she wanted to do it. The streets of Kingsbridge were hot and dusty, and the air was full of the flies that bred on the innumerable dunghills. All the shops were closed and the houses were locked up. The town was deserted. Everyone was in the meadow. She went to Jack's house. That was where the others would come when the apple bobbing was over. The door of the house stood open. She frowned in annoyance. Who had left it like that? Too many people had keys. Herself, Jack, Richard, and Martha. There was nothing much to steal. Aliena certainly did not have her money there. For years now, Philip had let her keep it in the Priory treasury. But the place would be full of flies. She stepped inside. It was dark and cool. Flies danced in the air in the middle of the room. Blue bottles crawled over the linen, and a pair of wasps disputed angrily around the stopper of the honeypot. And Alfred was sitting at the table. Aliena gave a small scream of fright, then recovered herself and said, "How did you get in?" "I've got a key." He had kept it a long time, Aliena thought. She looked at him. His broad shoulders were bony, and his face had a shrunken look. She said, "What are you doing here?"
"I came to see you."
She found she was trembling, not from fear, but from anger. "I don't want to see you now or ever again," she spat. "You treated me like a dog, and then when Jack took pity on you and hired you, you betrayed his trust and took all his craftsmen to Shiring." "I need money," he said, with a mixture of pleading and defiance in his voice.
"Then work."
"Building has stopped at Shiring. I can't get a job here at Kingsbridge."
"Then go to London. Go to Paris."
He persisted with ox-like stubbornness. "I thought you would help me out."
"There's nothing for you here. You'd better go away."
"Have you no pity?" he said, and now the defiance was gone and the tone was all pleading. She leaned on the table to steady herself.
Alfred, don't you understand that I hate you?
Why? He said. He looked injured, as if it came as a surprise to him.
Dear God, he's stupid, she thought. It's the nearest he's got to an excuse.
Go to the monastery if you want charity, she said wearily. Prior Philip's capacity for forgiveness is superhuman. Mine isn't.
But you're my wife, Alfred said. That was rich.
I'm not your wife, she hissed. You're not my husband. You never were. Now get out of this house.
To her surprise, he grabbed her by the hair.
You are my wife, he said.
He pulled her to him over the table, and with his free hand he grasped her breast and squeezed hard.
Aliena was taken completely by surprise. This was the last thing she had expected from a man who had slept in the same room as her for 9 months without ever managing to perform the sexual act. Automatically she screamed and pulled away from him, but he had a firm grip on her hair and he jerked her back.
There's nobody to hear you scream, he said. They're all across the river.
She was suddenly terribly afraid. They were alone, and he was very strong. After all the miles she had covered on the roads, all the years she had risked her neck travelling, she was being attacked at home by the man she had married. He saw the fear in her eyes and said, "Scared, are you? Perhaps you'd better be nice." Then he kissed her mouth. She bit his lip as hard as she could. He gave a roar of pain. She did not see the punch coming. It exploded on her cheek with such force that she had the terrified thought that he must have smashed her bones. For a moment she lost her vision and her balance. She reeled away from the table and felt herself falling. The rushes on the floor softened the impact as she hit the ground. She shook her head to clear it, and reached for the knife strapped to her left arm. Before she could draw it, both her wrists were seized, and she heard Alfred say, "I know about that little dagger. I've seen you undress, remember?" He released her hands, punched her face again, and grabbed the dagger himself. Aliena tried to wriggle away. He sat on her legs and put his left hand to her throat. She thrashed her arms. Suddenly the point of the dagger was an inch from her eyeball.
"Be still, or I'll put out your eyes," he said.
She froze. The idea of being blind terrified her. She had seen men who had been blinded as a punishment. They walked the streets begging, their empty sockets staring horribly at passers-by. Small boys tormented them, pinching them and stripping them until they gave in to rage, and tried in vain to catch hold of their tormentors, which made the game even better. They generally died within a year or two.
"I thought that would calm you down," Alfred said.
Why was he doing this? He had never had any lust for her. Was it just that he was defeated and angry and she was vulnerable? Did she stand for the world that had rejected him? He leaned forward, straddling her, with his knees either side of her hips, keeping the knife at her eye. Once again he put his face close to hers.
"Now," he said, "be nice."
He kissed her again. His unshaven face scratched her skin. His breath smelled of beer and onions. She kept her mouth closed tight.
"That's not nice," he said. "Kiss me back."
He kissed her again and brought the knife point even closer. When it touched her eyelid, she moved her lips. The taste of his mouth sickened her. He thrust his rough tongue between her lips. She felt as if she might throw up, and tried desperately to suppress the feeling for fear he would kill her. He pulled away from her again, but kept the knife at her face.
"Now," he said, "feel this."
He took her hand and pulled it under the skirt of his tunic. She touched his organ.
"Hold it," he said.
She grasped it.
"Now rub it gently."
She obeyed him. It occurred to her that if she could pleasure him this way, she might avoid being penetrated. She looked fearfully at his face. He was flushed, and his eyes were hooded. She stroked him all the way down to the root, remembering that Jack was driven wild by that. She was afraid she would never be able to enjoy this again, and tears came to her eyes. He jerked the knife dangerously.
"Not so hard," he said.
She concentrated. Then the door opened. Her heart leaped with hope. A wedge of bright sunlight fell across the room and shone dazzlingly through her tears. Alfred froze. She pulled her hand away. They both looked toward the door. Who was it? Aliena could not see. Not one of the children, please. God, she prayed, I would feel so ashamed. She heard a roar of rage. It was a man's voice. She blinked away her tears and recognized her brother Richard. Poor Richard. It was almost worse than if it had been Tommy. Richard, who had a scar instead of a lobe on his left ear to remind him of the terrible scene he had witnessed when he was 14 years old. Now he was witnessing another. How would he ever bear it? Alfred started to get to his feet, but Richard was too quick for him. Aliena saw Richard cross the little room in a blur and lash out with his booted foot, catching Alfred full on the jaw. Alfred crashed back against the table. Richard went after him, trampling on Aliena without noticing, lashing out at Alfred with his feet and fists. Aliena scrambled out of the way. Richard's face was a mask of ungovernable fury. He did not look at Aliena. He did not care about her, she understood. He was enraged, not about what Alfred had done to Aliena today, but because of what William and Walter had done to him, Richard, 18 years ago. He had been young and weak and helpless then, but now he was a big, strong man and a seasoned fighter, and he had, at last, found a target for the mad rage he had nursed inside for all those years. He hit Alfred again and again with both fists. Alfred staggered back around the table, trying feebly to defend himself with his raised arms. Richard caught him on the chin with a powerful swing, and Alfred fell backward. He lay on the rushes looking up, terrified. Aliena was frightened by her brother's violence and said, "That's enough, Richard!" Richard ignored her and stepped forward to kick Alfred. Then Alfred suddenly realized that he still had Aliena's knife in his hand. He dodged, came swiftly to his feet, and lashed out with the knife. Taken by surprise, Richard jumped back. Alfred lunged at him again, driving him back across the room. The two men were the same height and build, Aliena saw. Richard was a fighting man, but Alfred was armed. They were now unnervingly well matched. Aliena was suddenly afraid for her brother. What would happen if Alfred overcame him? She would have to fight Alfred herself then. She looked around for a weapon, her eyes lit on the pile of firewood beside the hearth. She snatched up a heavy log. Alfred lunged at Richard again. Richard dodged. Then, when Alfred's arm was at full stretch, Richard grabbed his wrist and pulled. Alfred staggered forward, off balance. Richard hit him several times very fast with both fists, punching his face and body. There was a savage grin on Richard's face, the smile of a man who is taking revenge. Alfred began to whimper and raised his arms to protect himself again. Richard hesitated, breathing hard. Aliena thought it would end then, but suddenly Alfred struck again with surprising speed, and this time the point of the knife grazed Richard's cheek. Richard jumped back, stung. Alfred moved in with the knife raised high. Aliena saw that Alfred would kill Richard. She ran at Alfred, swinging the log with all her might. She missed his head but struck his right elbow. She heard the crack as wood connected with bone. The blow numbed Alfred's hand and the knife fell from his fingers. The way it ended was dreadfully quick. Richard bent, swept up Aliena's knife, and with the same motion brought it up under Alfred's guard and stabbed him in the chest with terrific force. The dagger sank in up to the hilt. Aliena stared, horrified. It was a terrible blow. Alfred screamed like a stuck pig. Richard pulled the knife out, and Alfred's blood squirted out of the hole in his chest. Alfred opened his mouth to scream again, but no sound came. His face turned white and then grey, his eyes closed and he fell to the ground. Blood soaked into the rushes. Aliena knelt beside him. His eyelids fluttered. He was still breathing, but his life was draining from him. She looked up at Richard, standing over them both, breathing hard. "He's dying," she said. Richard nodded. He was not much moved. "I've seen better men die," he said. "I've killed men who deserved it less." Aliena was shocked at his harshness, but she did not say anything. She had just remembered the first time Richard killed a man. It was after William had taken over the castle, and she and Richard had been on the road to Winchester, and two thieves had attacked them. Aliena had stabbed one of the thieves, but she had forced Richard, who was only 15, to deliver the coup de grace. If he's heartless, she thought guiltily, who made him so? She looked at Alfred again. He opened his eyes and looked back at her. She almost felt ashamed of how little compassion she had for this dying man. She thought, as she looked into his eyes, that he had never been compassionate himself, nor forgiving, nor generous. He had nursed his resentments and hatreds all his life, and had taken his pleasure from acts of malice and revenge. Your life could have been different, Alfred, she thought. You could have been kind to your sister and forgiven your stepbrother for being cleverer than you. You could have married for love instead of for revenge. You could have been loyal to Prior Philip. You could have been happy. His eyes widened suddenly, and he said, God, it hurts. She wished he would just hurry up and die. His eyes closed. That's it, Richard said. Alfred stopped breathing. Aliena stood up. I'm a widow, she said. Alfred was buried in the graveyard at Kingsbridge Priory. It was his sister Martha's wish, and she was the only surviving blood relative. She was also the only person who was sad. Alfred had never been good to her, and she had always turned to Jack, her stepbrother, for love and protection, but nevertheless she wanted him buried somewhere close so that she could visit the grave. When they lowered the coffin into the ground, only Martha cried. Jack looked grimly relieved that Alfred was no more. Tommy, standing with Aliena, was keenly interested in everything. This was his first family funeral, and the rituals of death were all new to him. Sally was white-faced and frightened, holding Martha's hand. Richard was there. He told Aliena during the service that he had come to ask God's forgiveness for killing his brother-in-law. Not that he felt he had done wrong, he hastened to add. He just wanted to be safe. Aliena, whose face was still bruised and swollen from Alfred's last punch, recalled the dead man as he had been when she first met him. He had come to Earl's Castle with his father, Tom Builder, and Martha and Ellen and Jack. Already Alfred had been the bully of the family, big and strong and bovine, with a sly cunning and a streak of nastiness. If Aliena had thought then that she would end up married to him, she would have been tempted to throw herself off the battlements. She had not imagined she would ever see the family again after they left the castle, but both she and they had ended up living in Kingsbridge. She and Alfred had started the parish guild, which was now such an important institution in the life of the town. That was when Alfred had proposed to her. She had not dreamed that he might be motivated more by rivalry with his stepbrother than by desire for her. She had refused him then, but later he had discovered how to manipulate her, and had persuaded her to marry him by promising support for her brother. Looking back on that, she felt that Alfred had deserved the frustration and humiliation of their marriage. His motives had been heartless, and his reward had been lovelessness. Aliena could not help feeling happy. There was no question of her leaving and going to live in Winchester now, of course. She and Jack would be married immediately. She was putting on a solemn face for the funeral, and even thinking some solemn thoughts, but her heart was bursting for joy. Philip, with his apparently limitless capacity for pardoning people who had betrayed him, consented to bury Alfred. As the five adults and two children were standing around the open grave, Ellen arrived. Philip was cross. Ellen had cursed a Christian wedding, and she was not welcome in the priory close, but he could hardly turn her away from her stepson's funeral. The rites were over anyway, so Philip just walked away. Aliena was sorry. Philip and Ellen were both good people, and it was a shame they were enemies. But they were good in different ways, and they were both intolerant of rival ethics. Ellen was looking older, with extra lines on her face and more grey in her hair, but her golden eyes were still beautiful. She was wearing a rough sewn leather tunic and nothing else, not even shoes. Her arms and legs were tanned and muscular. Tommy and Sally ran to kiss her. Jack followed and embraced her, hugging her hard. Ellen lifted her cheek for Richard to kiss her and said, "You did the right thing." Don't feel guilty. She stood at the edge of the grave, looking in, and said, I was his stepmother. I wish I had known how to make him happy. When she turned from the grave, Aliena hugged her. They all walked slowly away. Aliena said to Ellen, Will you stay a while and have dinner? Gladly. She ruffled Tommy's red hair. I'd like to talk to my grandchildren. They grow so fast. When I first met Tom Builder, Jack was the age Tommy is now. They were approaching the Priory Gate. As you get older, the years seem to go faster. I believe... She broke off in mid-sentence and stopped walking. What is it? Said Aliena. Ellen was staring at the Priory Gateway. The wooden gates were open. The street outside was empty, but for a handful of small children on the far side, standing in a knot, staring at something out of sight. Richard, Ellen said sharply, don't go out. Everyone stopped. Aliena could see what had alarmed Ellen. The children looked as if they might be watching something or someone who was waiting just outside the gate, concealed by the wall. Richard reacted fast. It's a trap, he said, and without further ado, he turned around and ran. A moment later, a helmeted head looked around the gatepost. It belonged to a large man-at-arms. The man saw Richard running toward the church, shouted in alarm, and dashed into the close. He was followed by 3, 4, 5 more men. The funeral party scattered. The men-at-arms ignored them and went after Richard. Aliena was scared and mystified. Who would dare to attack the Earl of Shiring openly and in a priory? She held her breath as she watched them chase Richard across the close. He leaped over the low wall that the masons were building. His pursuers jumped over it behind him, unmindful that they were entering a church. The craftsmen froze in position, trowels and hammers raised, as first Richard, then his pursuers, charged by. One of the younger and more quick-thinking apprentices stuck out a shovel and tripped a man-at-arms, who went flying, but no one else intervened. Richard reached the door that led to the cloisters. The man closest behind him raised his sword above his head. For a terrible moment, Aliena thought the door was locked and Richard could not get in. The man-at-arms struck at Richard with his sword. Richard got the door open and slipped inside, and the sword bit into the wood as the door slammed. Aliena breathed again. The men-at-arms gathered around the cloister door, then began to look about uncertainly. They seemed to realize all of a sudden where they were. The craftsmen gave them hostile stares and hefted their hammers and axes. There were close to 100 builders and only 5 men-at-arms. Jack said angrily, "Who the hell are those people?" He was answered by a voice from behind. "They are the sheriff's men." Aliena turned around, aghast. She knew that voice horribly well. There at the gate, on a nervous black stallion, armed and wearing chainmail, was William Hamley. The sight of him sent a chill through her. Jack said, "Get out of here, you loathsome insect." William flushed at the insult, but he did not move. "I've come to make an arrest." "Go ahead. Richard's men will tear you apart. He won't have any men when he's in jail." "Who do you think you are? A sheriff can't put an earl in jail." "He can for murder." Aliena gasped. She saw immediately how William's devious mind was working. "There was no murder," she burst out. "There was," William said. "Earl Richard murdered Alfred Builder, and now I must explain to Prior Philip that he is harboring a killer." William kicked his horse and rode past them, across the west end of the unbuilt nave, to the kitchen courtyard, which was where laymen were received. Aliena watched him with incredulity. He was so evil, it was hard to believe. Poor Alfred, whom they had just buried, had done much wrong through small-mindedness and weakness of character. His badness was more tragic than anything else, but William was a real servant of the devil. Aliena thought, "When will we be rid of this monster?" The men-at-arms joined William in the kitchen courtyard, and one of them hammered on the kitchen door with the hilt of his sword. The builders left the site and stood in a crowd, glaring at the intruders, looking dangerous with their heavy hammers and sharp chisels. Aliena told Martha to take the children home. Then she and Jack stood with the builders. Prior Philip came to the kitchen door. He was shorter than William, and in his light summer habit he appeared very small by comparison with the beefy man on horseback in chainmail. But there was a look of righteous anger on Philip's face that made him seem more formidable than William. William said, "You are harbouring a fugitive." Philip interrupted him with a roar, "Leave this place!" William tried again. "There has been a murder."
"Get out of my priory!" Philip yelled.
"I am the sheriff."
"Not even the king may bring men of violence into the precincts of a monastery. Get out! Get out!"
The builders began to murmur angrily among themselves. The men-at-arms looked at them nervously. William said, "Even the prior of Kingsbridge must answer to the sheriff."
"Not on these terms. Get your men off the premises. Leave your weapons in the stable. When you're ready to act like a humble sinner in the house of God, you may enter the priory, and then the prior will answer your questions."
Philip stepped back inside and slammed the door. The builders cheered. Aliena found herself cheering too. William had been a figure of power and dread all her life, and it lifted her heart to see him defied by Prior Philip. But William was not yet ready to concede defeat. He got off his horse. Slowly he unbuckled his sword belt and handed it to one of his men. He said a few quiet words to the men, and they retreated across the priory close, taking his sword. William watched them until they reached the gate. Then he turned back and faced the kitchen door once again. He shouted, "Open up to the sheriff!" After a pause, the kitchen door opened, and Philip came out again. He looked down at William, now standing unarmed in the courtyard. Then he looked at the men-at-arms clustered around the gateway on the far side of the close, and finally he looked back at William and said, "Well, you are harbouring a murderer in the priory. Release him to me." Philip said, "There has been no murder in Kingsbridge. The Earl of Shiring murdered Alfred Builder 4 days ago."
"Wrong," Philip said. "Richard killed Alfred, but it wasn't murder. Alfred was caught in the act of attempted rape."
Aliena shuddered.
"Rape?"
William said.
"Who was he attempting to rape?"
"Aliena."
"But she is his wife,"
William said triumphantly.
"How can a man rape his wife?"
Aliena saw the direction of William's argument, and fury bubbled up inside her. Philip said, "That marriage has never been consummated, and she has applied for an annulment, which has never been granted. They were married in church. They are still married according to the law.
There was no rape.
On the contrary." William turned suddenly and pointed a finger at Aliena.
"She has been wanting to get rid of her husband for years, and she finally persuaded her brother to help her get him out of the way by stabbing him to death with her dagger."
The cold hand of fear gripped Aliena's heart. The tale he told was an outrageous lie, but for someone who had not actually seen what happened, it fitted the facts as plausibly as the real story. Richard was in trouble. Philip said, "The sheriff cannot arrest the Earl." That was true, Aliena realized. She had been forgetting. William pulled out a scroll. "I have a royal writ. I am arresting him on behalf of the king." Aliena was devastated. William had thought of everything.
"How did William manage that?"
she muttered. "He was very quick," Jack replied. "He must have ridden to Winchester and seen the king as soon as he heard the news." Philip held out his hand.
"Show me the writ."
William held it out. They were several yards apart. There was a momentary standoff when neither of them would move. Then William gave in and walked up the steps to hand the writ to Philip. Philip read it and gave it back.
"This doesn't give you the right to attack a monastery. It gives me the right to arrest Richard. He has asked for sanctuary."
"Ah." William did not look surprised. He nodded as if he had heard confirmation of something inevitable, and took two or three steps back. When he spoke again, his voice was raised so that everyone could hear clearly. "Let him know that he will be arrested the moment he leaves the priory. My deputies will be stationed in the town and outside his castle. Remember," he looked around at the assembled crowd, "remember that anyone who harms a sheriff's deputy harms a servant of the king." He turned back to Philip.
Tell him that he may stay within the sanctuary as long as he likes, but if he wants to leave, he will have to face justice. There was silence. William walked slowly down the steps and across the kitchen courtyard. His words had sounded to Aliena like a sentence of imprisonment. The crowd parted for him. He threw a smug look at Aliena as he passed her. They all watched him walk to the gate and mount his horse. He gave an order and trotted away, leaving two of his men standing at the gate, looking in. When Aliena turned around, Philip was standing beside her and Jack. "Go to my house," he said quietly. "We must discuss this." He went back into the kitchen. Aliena had the impression that he was secretly pleased about something. The excitement was over. The builders returned to work, talking animatedly. Ellen went to the house to be with the grandchildren. Aliena and Jack walked through the graveyard, skirting the building site, and went into Philip's house. He was not yet there. They sat on a bench to wait. Jack sensed Aliena's anxiety for her brother and gave her a comforting hug. Looking around, Aliena realized that year by year Philip's house was slowly becoming more comfortable. It was still bare by the standards of an earl's private quarters in a castle, say, but it was not as austere as it had once been. In front of the little altar in the corner there was now a small rug to save the prior's knees during the long nights of prayer, and on the wall behind the altar hung a jeweled silver crucifix that must have been a costly gift. It would do Philip no harm to be easier on himself as he got older, Aliena thought. Perhaps he would be a little easier on others, too. A few moments later Philip came in with a flustered-looking Richard in tow. Richard began speaking immediately.
"William can't do this. It's mad. I found Alfred trying to rape my sister. He had a knife in his hand. He almost killed me."
"Calm down," Philip said. "Let's talk about this quietly and try calmly to determine what the dangers are, if any. Why don't we all take a seat?"
Richard sat down, but he went on talking.
"Dangers? There are no dangers. A sheriff can't imprison an earl for anything, even murder."
"He's going to try," Philip said. "He'll have men waiting outside the priory."
Richard made a dismissive gesture.
"I can get past William's men blindfold. They're no problem. Jack can be waiting for me outside the town wall with a horse."
"And when you reach Earl's Castle," said Philip,
"same thing. I can sneak past William's men, or have my own men come out to meet me."
"That sounds satisfactory," said Philip.
"And what then?"
"Then nothing," said Richard.
"What can William do?"
"Well, he still has a royal writ that summons you to answer a charge of murder. He'll try to arrest you any time you leave the castle."
"I'll go everywhere escorted. And when you hold court in Shiring and other places?"
"Same thing.
But will anyone abide by your decisions, knowing that you yourself are a fugitive from the law?"
"They'd better," Richard said darkly. "They should remember how William enforced his decisions when he was the earl. They may not be as frightened of you as they were of William. They may think you're not as bloodthirsty and evil. I hope they would be right."
"Don't count on it."
Aliena frowned. It was not like Philip to be so pessimistic, unless he had an ulterior motive. She suspected that he was laying the groundwork for some scheme he had up his sleeve. "I'd bet money," she thought, "that the quarry will come into this somehow."
"My main worry is the king," Philip was saying. "In refusing to answer the charge, you're defying the crown. A year ago I would have said, go ahead and defy it. But now that the war is over, it won't be so easy for earls to do as they please."
Jack said, "It looks as if you'll have to answer the charge, Richard."
"He can't do that," Aliena said. "He's got no hope of justice."
"She's right," Philip said. "The case would be heard in the royal court. The facts are already known. Alfred tried to force himself upon Aliena, Richard came in, they fought, and Richard killed Alfred. Everything depends on the interpretation. And with William, a loyal supporter of King Stephen, making the complaint, and Richard being one of Duke Henry's greatest allies, the verdict will probably be guilty. Why did King Stephen sign the writ? Presumably because he's decided to take revenge on Richard for fighting against him. The death of Alfred provides him with a perfect excuse."
Aliena said, "We must appeal to Duke Henry to intervene." It was Richard who looked dubious now.
I wouldn't like to rely on him. He's in Normandy. He might write a letter of protest, but what else could he do? Conceivably, he could cross the Channel with an army, but then he would be in breach of the peace pact, and I don't think he'd risk that for me. Aliena felt miserable and frightened. Oh, Richard, you're caught in a terrible web, and it's all because you saved me. He gave her his most charming grin. I'd do it again, too, Ali.
I know.
He meant it. For all his faults, he was brave. It seemed unfair that he should be confronted with such an intractable problem so soon after he succeeded to the earldom. As Earl, he was a disappointment to Aliena, a terrible disappointment, but he did not deserve this.
"Well, what a choice," he said. "I can stay here in the priory until Duke Henry becomes king, or hang for murder. I'd become a monk if you monks didn't eat so much fish."
"There might be another way out," said Philip. Aliena looked at him eagerly. She had suspected that he was hatching a plot, and she would be grateful to him if he could resolve Richard's dilemma.
"You could do penance for the killing," Philip went on.
"Would it involve eating fish?" Richard said flippantly.
"I'm thinking about the Holy Land," Philip said.
They all went quiet. Palestine was ruled by the King of Jerusalem, Baldwin III, a Christian of French origin. It was constantly under attack by neighboring Muslim countries, especially Egypt to the south and Damascus to the east. To go there, a journey of 6 months or a year, and join the armies fighting to defend the Christian kingdom, was indeed the kind of penance a man might do to purge his soul of a killing. Aliena felt a qualm of anxiety. Not everybody came back from the Holy Land, but she had been worrying about Richard in wars for years, and the Holy Land was probably no more dangerous than England. She would just have to fret. She was used to it.
"The King of Jerusalem always needs men," Richard said.
Every few years, emissaries from the Pope would tour the country, telling tales of battle and glory in the defense of Christendom, trying to inspire young men to go and fight in the Holy Land. "But I've only just come into my earldom," he said. "And who would be in charge of my lands while I was away?"
"Aliena," said Philip.
Aliena suddenly felt breathless. Philip was proposing that she should take the place of the Earl and rule as her father had done. The proposal stunned her for a moment, but as soon as she recovered her senses, she knew it was right. When a man went to the Holy Land, his domains were normally looked after by his wife. There was no reason why a sister should not fulfill the same role for an unmarried earl. And she would run the earldom the way she had always known it ought to be run, with justice and vision and imagination. She would do all the things Richard had so dismally failed to do. Her heart raced as she thought the idea through. She would try out new ideas, ploughing with horses instead of oxen, and planting spring crops of oats and peas on fallow land. She would clear new lands for planting, establish new markets, and open the quarry to Philip after all this time. He had thought of that, of course. Of all the clever schemes Philip had dreamed up over the years, this was probably the most ingenious. At one stroke he solved three problems. He got Richard off the hook, he put a competent ruler in charge of the earldom, and he got his quarry at last. Philip said, "I've no doubt that King Baldwin would welcome you, especially if you went with such of your knights and men who feel inspired to join you. It would be your own small crusade." He paused a moment to let that thought sink in. "William couldn't touch you over there, of course," he went on, "and you would return a hero. Nobody would dare try to hang you then."
"The Holy Land," Richard said, and there was a death or glory light in his eyes.
It was the right thing for him, Aliena thought. He was no good at governing the earldom. He was a soldier, and he wanted to fight. She saw the faraway look on his face. In his mind he was there already, defending a sandy redoubt, sword in hand, a red cross on his shield, fighting off a heathen horde under the baking sun. He was happy. 4. The whole town came to the wedding. Aliena was surprised. Most people treated her and Jack as more or less married already, and she had thought they would consider the wedding a mere formality.
She had expected a small group of friends, mostly people of her own age and Jack's fellow master craftsmen. But every man, woman, and child in Kingsbridge turned out. She was touched by their presence, and they all looked so happy for her. She realized that they had sympathized with her predicament all these years, even though they had tactfully refrained from mentioning it to her, and now they shared her joy in finally marrying the man she had loved for so long. She walked through the streets on her brother Richard's arm, dazzled by the smiles that followed her, drunk with happiness. Richard was leaving for the Holy Land tomorrow. King Stephen had accepted this solution. Indeed, he seemed relieved to be rid of Richard so easily. Sheriff William was furious, of course, for his aim had been to dispossess Richard of the earldom, and now he had lost all chance of doing that. Richard himself still had that faraway look in his eyes. He could hardly wait to be gone. This was not the way her father had intended things to turn out, she thought as she entered the priory close. Richard fighting in a distant land, and Aliena herself playing the role of Earl. However, she no longer felt obliged to run her life according to her father's wishes. He had been dead for 17 years, and anyway, she knew something that he had not understood, that she would be a far better Earl than Richard. She had already taken the reins of power. The castle servants were lazy after years of slack management, and she had smartened them up. She had reorganized the stores, had the great hall painted, and cleaned out the bakehouse and the brewery. The kitchen had been so filthy that she had burned it down and built a new one. She had started to pay out the weekly wages herself as a sign that she was in charge, and she had dismissed 3 men-at-arms for persistent drunkenness. She had also ordered a new castle to be built an hour's ride from Kingsbridge. Earl's castle was too far from the cathedral. Jack had drawn a design for the new place. They would move in as soon as the keep was built. Meanwhile, they would split their time between Earl's Castle and Kingsbridge. They had already spent several nights together in Aliena's old room at Earl's Castle, far from Philip's disapproving gaze. They had been like honeymooners, swamped by insatiable physical passion. Perhaps it was because, for the first time ever, they had a bedroom with a door they could lock. Privacy was an extravagance of lords. Everyone else slept and made love downstairs in the communal hall. Even couples who lived in a house were always liable to be seen by their children or relatives or neighbors dropping by. People locked their doors when they were out, not when they were in. Aliena had never been dissatisfied with that, but now she had discovered the special thrill of knowing you could do anything you liked without the risk of being seen. She thought of some of the things she and Jack had done in the past 2 weeks, and she blushed. Jack was waiting for her in the partly built nave of the cathedral with Martha and Tommy and Sally. At weddings, the couple normally exchanged vows in the church porch, then went inside for the mass. Today the first bay of the nave would serve as porch. Aliena was glad they were getting married in the church Jack was building. It was as much a part of Jack as the clothes he wore or the way he made love. His cathedral was going to be like him, graceful, inventive, cheerful, and totally unlike anything that had gone before. She looked lovingly at him. He was 30 years old. He was such a handsome man with his mane of red hair and his sparkling blue eyes. He had been a very ugly boy, she remembered. She had thought him somewhat beneath her notice. But he had fallen in love with her at the very start, he said, and he still winced when he remembered how they had all laughed at him because he said he had never had a father. It was nearly 20 years ago. 20 years. She might never have seen Jack again had it not been for Prior Philip, who now entered the church from the cloisters and came smiling into the nave. He looked genuinely thrilled to be marrying them at last. She thought of her first meeting with him. She recalled vividly the despair she had felt when the wool merchant tried to cheat her, after all the effort and heartbreak that had gone into amassing that sack of fleeces, and her overwhelming gratitude to the young black-haired monk who had saved her and said, "I'll buy your wool any time." His hair was grey now. He had saved her. Then he had almost destroyed her by forcing Jack to choose between her and the cathedral. He was a hard man on questions of right and wrong.
a bit like her father. However, he had wanted to perform the marriage service. Ellen had cursed Aliena's first wedding, and the curse had worked. Aliena was glad. If her marriage to Alfred had not been completely insupportable, she might be living with him still. It was odd to reflect on what might have been. It gave her chills, like bad dreams and dreadful imaginings. She recalled the pretty, sexy Arab girl in Toledo who had fallen in love with Jack. What if he had married her? Aliena would have arrived in Toledo with her baby in her arms, to find Jack in the lap of domesticity, sharing his body and his mind with someone else. The thought was horrifying. She listened to him, mumbling the Paternoster. It seemed amazing now to think that when she came to live in Kingsbridge, she had paid no more attention to him than to the grain merchant's cat. But he had noticed her. He had loved her secretly all those years. How patient he had been. He had watched as the younger sons of the county gentry came to court her one by one and went away again disappointed or offended or defiant. He had seen, clever, clever boy that he was, that she could not be won by wooing, and he had approached her sidelong, as a friend rather than a lover, meeting her in the woods and telling her stories and making her love him without her noticing. She remembered that first kiss, so light and casual, except that it had burned her lips for weeks afterward. She remembered the second kiss even more vividly. Every time she heard the rumble of the fulling mill, she remembered the dark, unfamiliar, unwelcome surge of lust that she had felt. One of the abiding regrets of her life was the way she had turned cold after that. Jack had loved her totally and honestly, and she had been so frightened that she had turned away, pretending she did not care for him. It had hurt him deeply, and although he had continued to love her and the wound had healed, it left a scar, as deep wounds do, and sometimes she saw that scar in the way he looked at her when they quarreled. And she spoke coldly to him, and his eyes seemed to say, "Yes, I know you, you can be cold, you can hurt me. I must be on my guard." Was there a wary look in his eyes now, as he vowed to be loving and faithful to her all the rest of his life? "He's got reason enough to doubt me," she thought. "I married Alfred, and what greater betrayal could there be than that? But then I made up for it by searching half of Christendom to find Jack." Such disappointments, betrayals, and reconciliations were the stuff of married life, but she and Jack had gone through them before the wedding. Now, at least, she felt confident that she knew him. Nothing was likely to surprise her. It was a funny way to do things, but it might be better than making your vows first and getting to know your spouse afterward. The priests would not agree, of course. Indeed, Philip would be apoplectic if he knew what was going through her mind, but then again, priests knew less about love than anyone. She made her vows, repeating the words after Philip, thinking to herself how beautiful was the promise, "With my body I worship you." Philip would never understand that. Jack put a ring on her finger. "I've been waiting for this all my life," she thought. They looked into one another's eyes. Something had changed in him, she could tell. She realized that until this moment he had never really been sure of her. Now he looked deeply content. "I love you," he said. "I always will." That was his vow. The rest was religion, but now he had made his own promise, and Aliena realized that she, too, had been unsure of him until now. In a moment they would walk forward into the crossing for the mass, and after that they would accept the congratulations and good wishes of the townspeople, and take them home and give them food and ale and make merry. But this small instant was just for them. Jack's look said, "You and me, together, always." And Aliena thought, "At last." It felt very peaceful. Part 6. 1170 to 1174. Chapter 17. Kingsbridge was still growing. It had long ago overflowed its original walls, which now enclosed fewer than half the houses. About 5 years ago, the guild had built a new wall, taking in the suburbs that had grown up outside the old town,
and now there were more suburbs outside the new wall. The meadow on the other side of the river, where the townspeople had traditionally held Lammas Day and Midsummer Eve festivities, was now a small village called Newport. On a cold Easter Sunday,